If you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door, and its desire is for you, but you must master it. Cain told Abel, his brother, and it came about when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and killed him. So, this is a story that we know, and I want to just talk about the idea, the title of our lesson is Intellect and Emotion. And I want you to understand that there's in this story some intellectual things that are going on, and then there's some emotional things that are going on. And so it was obvious that Cain had been doing some thinking, and that he decided that he wanted to give a sacrifice, but he wanted to give a sacrifice that is from what he does for a living, and which is tilling the ground. He wants to bring a vegetable and fruit sacrifice, whatever that may have been. I'm under the impression that there was something of a competition between him and his brother, and that in the doing of that, he probably made it more expensive or greater than what Abel's was. And then he had all worked out in his mind that this is going to be acceptable. And when he got there, God said, "I'm sorry, I won't accept your sacrifice." "What do you mean you won't accept my sacrifice?" Now, it doesn't actually tell us this, but it does. When God goes to Cain and says, "Why are you angry?" There is an insinuation here. Why are you angry? You should not be angry. The God of heaven knows why he's angry. He knows why his countenance fell. He knows all things. And so the question is not for God, that God's asking for information. He's trying to get Cain to see, what are you doing? And so, why are you angry? What's made you angry? And he said, "Well," and it's like Naaman, "I thought," because he had done something on his own that he wanted to do, and it didn't have the approval of God. And so he goes on, "If you do well, will you not be accepted?" Saying that, you know, if we just change that to, "If you do what I tell you to do, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do what I tell you to do, sin's waiting for you and is crouching at the door. And you must rule over sin," meaning that your good emotions are not to rule over the Word of God. You are to follow what God says, be obedient to it. That is where intellect comes in and will rule over emotion. And then for me, because I'm a twin and I know how many fights I got in with my own brother, I assume that after Cain told Abel what happened, that Abel said, "Well, why don't you just do what God says?" And it got him killed, because he didn't want to hear that. "I may take that from God, but I'm not taking that from you." And then from there, we know what happens to him. So, today is another one of those days that I got an article from the Wizard of Ads by Roy Williams. And so he talks about advertising, but it applies so very much to what we do. And so I want you at this time to think about being on an advertising team and consider yourself a salesperson that he's going to mention in just a minute. And so let me read this story to you. Does the customer typically buy the best value, or does she buy what she feels to be the best value? In reality, people usually do what their emotions dictate, then find the logic to justify it. Nothing is quite so important as emotion in advertising and selling. Regardless of what you sell, the important things to grasp are the intangibles. You don't hear that every day. Okay. So, as an expert in your industry, you see your product far more intellectually than your customer. The benefits that you see in your product are different from the benefits your customer sees. You see things that make your product different from our competitors. Your customer sees only what your product will do for her. And chances are your competitor's product will do the same thing. Your customer will buy whichever product she feels best about. Make sure that she feels best about yours. Advertising may increase the customer's emotional predisposition toward your store, as well as increase the number of selling opportunities you may have, but it often takes a salesperson to close the sale. Good advertising begins the process of selling, but it is the process that must be completed on the sales floor. Do your salespeople know what your ads say? Now, that you would think that's an automatic, but it's a good question. Are they in step with the spirit and the thrust of the message that you're sending to the public? Listening to your salespeople should be like hearing an extension of your ads. If you're advertising and your salespeople aren't saying the same thing, you must bring the two together. The most effective selling organization will be the one whose external sales message, advertising, is in perfect harmony with its internal sales message, sales representation or presentation. If your ad writers are marching to the beat of the same drum heard by your sales staff, there will be synchronicity and success. If they're marching to different rhythms or in different directions, there will be chaos. How well do you play the drum? Okay, and so here we have this sense of things of which this is right on the money about how people are in line with advertising and sales. How many businesses have marketing department that don't talk to the sales organization? I'm telling you, I know many of them that are that way. That marketing is marketing and we do our thing and we do our advertising and we're over here working hard to bring in more people and to make products known and all the good stuff that way. And the sales organization needs to find out what we're doing and keep up with it. Where the sales organization says, wait a minute, we're the guys that make the sales. We're the ones that have the relationship with the customer. You need to stick with what we're doing. And then management isn't paying attention. If that's the case, if we have them at war. So, consider what happens if they're not on the same team. And you understand, we're saying one thing over the air, and we're doing another thing in the store. What happens when they are? Well, what we said out there is the same thing that we do when you come in the store. You can see, okay, that that sending double messages doesn't help a business. Sending single messages does. Okay. Consider again, salespeople only care about sales numbers without caring about customer satisfaction. I want to make the sale, but I don't care if in 30 days you still like your car or not, or whether you like the product that you just bought, and I wipe my hands of all those things. Oh, that goes to the complaint department, and we're not the complaint department. I tell you, you'll never make another sale to that person. Those salespeople generally do not get a lot of repeat business because of it. And a product can be so valuable that the person is not the reason for buying it most of the time. But a salesperson's input is valuable because it takes products' benefits, okay, and even their weaknesses, and puts them in the best light for feeling that you've made a good choice. Okay, so the article mentioned something about intangibles. I want to go back to intangibles for a moment. With automobiles, this would be fun if we could just do this. If I was to ask the young people, how comfortable do you want your car to be versus how cool it looks? Or what kind of radio do you want compared to how comfortable the seat is? I think that what I did back when would be the same thing that you would do now. I want good music going down the road, and I want to look like I've got something going on here, okay, and that I've got a nice car, and how well it rides is not really all that's on my mind. If I were to ask their parents, what do you think about that? I think the seat matters a lot. I want a seat that I glide down the road, and if there's a bump, I don't even notice. I just hear a little something. I want this car to, and do you understand who you're selling to makes a lot of difference. So the comfort of the seats of the ride, the quality of the music produced, the benefits of safety are all intangibles, yet highly sought after particular people. I want my family safe. Volvo made a fortune off of having the safest vehicle, or so they said. And so they made double walls on the side and all kinds of things that would gave it extra support. And especially the military loved Volvos. I guess it went through them. The need for transportation, you see, is really what we're after when we go to buy an automobile. And the comfort during the ride, the safety, and whatever else may be included to be my car, and then to be proud of the fact of the car that I just got. That's what we're really going to do. To deal only with transportation aspects of the vehicle would leave most of the reasons why people buy a car out of the whole process. And y'all get that, don't you? When we go to buy, we're looking for something. We're looking for something specific. So now then, when I take that and I want to bring it to doing some teaching, if we were to parallel the education of our children, and I'm not just doing it with children, but I just want you to see this, with children or anyone really, to advertising and sales, what similarities would you see? And so, do you think that teaching the basics for spiritual growth is necessary? And we would say, of course, that's necessary. We need to do that. Do you think that addressing how spiritual things are interwoven into physical lives would be involved? Absolutely. That's going to be, we need that. Do you think that we begin to teach priorities to our children, that our feelings of what matters will be imprinted on our children? So, if I think that spiritual things matter a great deal, I am going to act like they matter a great deal. And regardless of whether I say it, my children are going to pick up on that. And if I say, well, you know, not everything is all, everything isn't that important. And so if you miss a service, you're not less faithful if you miss a service. You're not less faithful if you're this or that. And if we take that attitude, do you think that you leave an impression? And I believe that you do. Okay. So, do we understand that the Bible well enough to be able to offer our children the benefits of being godly as opposed to the feel-good selfishness of the carnal world? Because isn't that what carnality is? Is that I want comfort of some sort, ease of some sort, feel good somehow. That's what we're really seeking for, and that, in general, sin feels good. And so consequently, why would you deny yourself that for this? If we don't have that in their minds, do you understand what's going to happen? So what kind of message needs to be sent by both father and mother if we're going to consider their views as being advertising and sales? If one sends one message and the other sends another, do you think the message is going to go through? That's what I'm asking. And if you both say the same things, do you understand? We teach something. Last week I offered that father is about unity and mother is about harmony. But does the agreement between the two teachers offer a better process than going each his own way? You see, we would not make unity more important than harmony, or diminish harmony for the sake of unity any more than we would diminish unity for the sake of harmony. No, no. And so if I were to take, and this is a real thing, an advertising for a particular drug. I didn't choose one in particular, but I could have chosen a number of them. The commercial plays up the benefits of what it's going to be to have this drug. It is going to help your diabetes. It's going to help your heart. It's going to help your circulation. It's going to help you in whatever it's going to do. It is so good. It is so far above what's already been out there. You just can't wait. You shouldn't deny yourself having this wonderful drug because it is going to give you benefit. Tremendous benefit. Y'all know that's what it says. And then we get to the end of the commercial, and an auctioneer comes on. And the auctioneer comes on and he starts talking about this fast and he tells you all the things that are wrong with this, what it could do to you, what it might do to you, and oh my side, it could make you blind. Whatever it says on that part, they run through it as fast as they can run through it. You can't really understand, and hopefully you just turn it off and only heard the benefits and not the problems that it can cause. And in the doing of that, it is done by design. So that contrast of the new and better feeling, which is what we're trying to get you to say, and oh, by the way, I just love, depending on what it is, they find the best people for having such a hard time with the drug I'm on. I would do anything just to feel a little better. Now that I have my drug, I can skip through the flowers. I can sing songs and do all the wonderful things that need to be done because I tried Trulicity or whatever the drug is going to be. And you go, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? So what I also find is that we identify with the actors and actresses that are in this commercial, that they look like us, meaning approximately the same age as the drug that is being sold for, and that and they look like you, only just a little better, and their smile is fantastic. They'll be involved with wholesome activities that we all approve of, and they will smile often, and they will do everything they can do to offer the best scenario that you should buy this drug, okay, without hearing what you're going to hear in the fine print. Okay, so if you begin to listen to the auctioneer and you do that, you realize, are you kidding? I'm not going to take a risk like that for whatever this drug is. How many read the fine print at the end of a sale? And how often will you fall for the same disguised trick? We do. We do. And so that when I come to this and I start talking along these lines, when we go to teach godly attitudes, attitudes now, do you see that God's way is not based on trickery, but solid truth? I've got a serious point about this. When we think about, we've almost made, you shall know the truth and the truth will set you free, is almost like a banner that we use, and it's become trite in my mind. What it means is not trite. And if you consider it, it's not trite. When you consider how it works, it's not trite. It is that the truth, telling the truth, gives good information, you know, every time, that someone can make a good decision about and end up with a good result because of it. Whether it is positive, meaning about things going to heaven, or negative of avoiding hell, it is either way. When we understand what God has said, this is going to be the fruits of the Spirit. These are the fruits of the flesh. You need to understand what's going to happen if you do this and you deny yourself for your lifetime in this short life you live, or you can have all eternity in a place you never want to be because you didn't. Well, now that's pretty plain. But at the same time, because it is the truth, we can make a good decision. And there's not one of us that hasn't gone down the wrong road at least once. And we've tried something we shouldn't try. We've gone to the place we shouldn't go. We thought that we could handle something we can't handle. And then we found that the truth was the truth. And we came back to the truth. And now the truth has set me free. I don't go down those roads. How many groups that offer salvation are using the advertising method to sell their congregation rather than teaching Jesus? Now, do y'all see that happening in our world? Not so much in a small town. But in Albuquerque, we had, trying to remember the name, the Copper Something Church, which is the newest and finest church that has ever been in Albuquerque. And it was on every billboard along the interstate that you may know that we are up to date, modern, we are good thinkers, and we're going to help you in every kind of way. And there was not one piece of evidence that would have made that so, except that that's what we think. It was an opinion plastered all over these billboards, and people were driving by, and people left and went where they'd been going to go try the new church. They were advertising how much we do and what we can do and all those things. And there's a place for you. We've got a place for you. It doesn't matter where you've been. If you're single, we've got a place for you. If you're married, we got a place for you. If you've been divorced, we have a place for you. And we have counseling. And if you're a widow or if you're a widower, we've got something for you. We have every answer for everything except how to deal with sin. And they don't talk about that. They don't talk about what truth talks about in the Bible. They don't talk about the things that are necessary, you see. And consequently, people go there by the droves, feel good for the moment, and then they're going to be disappointed when the day of judgment comes. Do you want to set up an advertising scheme for your children, or do you want to teach them what good thinking is and the methods and the attitudes that are within that? Now we're where I want to be. Who's going to be your model for how to teach your children? Now, I don't know how you're doing it. So that when I look at Logan and poor Miss, I know you're right at the end. It's time. Okay. But what are you going to do? Who are you going to use as your model? And we generally use our parents and how I was raised. And I think that was good and there was a good in it. I am sure. But is it the best that it could be? Could it be improved on? Is the time, is what you learned back 20 plus years ago fit for today going forward? And now we have to think about those things. If we think about the children of Israel after the 12 spies come back, what was the message? Well, we had two that came back and said, we can take this land because we got God with us. We had 10 that came back and said, no, we can't. The land is fortified. The people are large. We can't do this. What did the general people follow? We can't do this. If the spies had said the same thing, would that have been a different result? If they all said, yes, we can. Do you think they'd have gone forward? I do. I think that they would have gone forward. If we can do this, if you think we can do this, we can do this. And so, as you can see, our attitudes teach as much as our words and our examples do. And when united together to work for the same goal, we influence tremendously. If we divide over manner, leadership, goals, and so forth, we fail. You hear me? I quit teaching with the idea of programmed teaching quite some time ago. And it doesn't mean that we're not going to study the subject. It means that I don't want a program where people come in and we're going to run you through the program and assume that you learn something. See, I think that we have to see to it that someone learns and that we get the feedback that says so, and that they have an application for that, and that they're thinking on their own, because it's necessary. It is our independent thinking that makes us strong. When we do disagree and then we get to talk about it, you see, and offer some thoughts, we stir our minds. We consider what's going on. We realize that all my ideas aren't perfect and that not all your ideas are perfect. And we become strong together. It is in that vein of things that I think that teaching should be. Whether we're at home teaching our children to come, okay, to come to God, I'm saying, not just to worship, okay, and the specific directions of how their hearts should be, or in the congregation that is taking on a challenging work, we need to see that we should surely be seeking to do it together. Does everybody do the same thing? No, they can't. We never have. Our unity in projects will be viewed as a unity in heart. So as Cain tried to incorporate his thinking into the service of God, many today treat God with the disrespect, in a disrespectful way, by thinking that they're helping. I want you to think about that with me for just a minute. Can you help God? The creator of all that you know, that is so complex that we can't understand it. I go back to the LIGO gravitational measurements of how fine-tuned that is, that it takes a team of people to understand what the results are, and they have to have great communication skills to do it. And do we think that that's all there is that's complicated? Everything is that kind of complicated because God is that kind of detailed, that kind of intelligent. And the way He did what He's done is unbelievable. Now then, do I think then that what? That I can help that? See, I don't think I can help it. I think the only thing I can do is repeat it. I think His truth has been given to us. I have truth that came from a source that is impeccable. Here, let me tell you what impeccable said, because I'm not that guy. Got too many mistakes. Cain thinks the other way. Cain's example is to teach us that God doesn't need our help in creating what is good, that's for sure, and that He needs our obedience from a good heart that declares Him worthy to be followed. Cain tried to do something else, and it was rejected, and he is rejected, and it caused him to sin in the worst kind of way. So what are we teaching? Are we teaching, open your Bible and find where it said that? For your sake, not for our knowledge, but for your knowledge. And as you consider yourself, think about the speed laws. Do you obey because the penalty of penalty, or because God told you the laws to obey the laws of the land? I'm not going to answer. This is one for you to answer. Why do you do that? Why do you obey the speed laws? Okay. Do you try to look as if you're obedient when you're not? Is really what I'm asking you, right? Is that if you're doing it because, you know, I don't want to get caught and I don't want to pay, that's one thing. But it would be better if I would just accept what God said. Compliance is not obedience. That I can say. Willing obedience is not required, it's given. If there's a place where I have a problem, it's in being willing sometimes. I'm willing about a lot of things. I'm easy. It's easy a lot of times. But there's always within every one of us something that we don't want to do. And it is in that place that we give the greatest worship that we give, when we comply willingly, because we are declaring God's thinking is better than my own. What a gift that is. What a gift that is. And so, what is your goal? Personally, what is your goal? Is it to be totally compliant, totally willing to be compliant? And I hope that it is to be willing. Willing submission. Because of respect of who we serve. Our study of angels that we just began this morning is going to actually come to the place where we touch on this. We touched on it this morning when we actually talked about the idea that angels do what they're told. And we said, why is it that they do that? Is it because they don't have the ability to think the other way? Or is it because they have such respect for God that they will do exactly what He says because they don't think they can improve on it? I think it's the latter, personally. May it be that way with us. So, if you're not a Christian, does this kind of thinking, intellect over emotion, actually matter? Do you find yourself in trouble over the fact that you let your emotions rule and it gets you into trouble? Or do you have the intellect to overrule your emotion? And it's a real question. I tell you that serving the Lord will give you reason for it. And for us that have been baptized and accepted Jesus, we really need to take a look. Am I obeying? Is it willingly? Is it what it should be? Or is it something less than what it should be? And then I need to do something about that. Lastly is, in our teaching, may we always be positive about what we're actually asking of someone to do. What God is asking them to do, let me be one to show them. Think about these things, and if we can help you, won't you come as we stand and sing?